I'm starting to feel it. Are you? Yes. It's time for a fishing report, brought to you by the Carlton General Store.
Minifish bites, if you got good bait.
Well, here's maybe a couple of little tips we'd like to relate. At least I think we've got a tip. You got a little trip tip there, Leaf?
Yeah, I got a tip based on my trips lately. Yeah, you betcha.
It is. The weather has changed a lot since we talked last time about fish. It's gotten colder.
Real cold.
Yeah, way colder.
Went back out to Rufus. That's kind of one of the things I like to do at this time of the year. Things have been a bit slower out there, though. I'm afraid they're shucking water over into Banks Lake, kind of trying to restore the levels on some of those reservoirs at this time of the year. So whenever that happens, that waterway, when it calms down, it allows the fish to spread out and just kind of be everywhere. And we really count on trying to have those little pockets of calmer water be the things that attract them. So when those, when everything's
when it's
calm,
all calm,
they're just kind of spread out.
Do those guys, we're talking about the big triploids back there in Rufus Lake.
And if you're lucky, the red bands and some other things.
Do they have different habits being so different looking? Do they act different than?
They're just super opportunistic and they're more likely to look up, just like any hatchery fish, they're going to take any opportunity they can to eat. They'll eat most anything. I'm afraid, for that matter, they're not super organic because I have found weird stuff in their guts, and anything from plastic bags to cigarette butts and chewing gum and rocks. So
weird. So
they're obviously not the smartest critter in the farm.
The reason they're so big and football shaped isn't because it's some sort of magic genetic code.
No,
it's actually they eat a hell of a lot of stuff.
Yeah, no, they get a lot of food fed to them while they're in those pens, and then they're released at usually a fairly good size. You know, they used to release fish in that system at like 25, 30 pounds, and that's why our state record will stand probably forever for tripleoided rainbow trout at 32, I believe. Jeez. It was about 10, 15 years ago they kind of stopped or changed their practices with that, and the biggest you'll see them release now is maybe 12 to 15 pounds, which... still an incredible fish.
That's a huge rainbow trout.
I know
trout.
It sounds like just, but when it's like half the size of the megalithic monster that there were before. But, you know, it is kind of better that they're doing it that way anyway. I mean, you get those fish that big, they're just kind of just big fat globs. They don't, you know, you'll know a big difference. You see the big difference when you get into a red band. You know it because I finally got one the other day when I went up and out of probably 20, 25 triploids lately. And the red band was probably only 3.5 pounds. It fought as good as an 8 pound or better than an 8 pound triploid. I mean, and when you held that fish in your hand, you could feel this firm, muscular feel to their flesh instead of this really flabby kind of just gross feel.
Couch potato fish.
And you know, a certain amount of, I like that those triploids have a certain amount of fat for the cooking, but they obviously get past that point and they're almost just like, obese to a point where it's probably not healthy. I'm sure it's pressing on their organs and have congenital heart failure, they're like big couch potatoes.
I thought the story on those guys was back in the day that they were just escapees.
They would quite often. There's 3 out of the 4 net pen operations left. And I know that the one that isn't there anymore would experience regular problems. I mean, they're just like those the net pens out there in the ocean. So they can suffer some of those same problems having to do with the anchoring systems. And so when that flow in there gets super strong in the springtime, usually is when that happens. They're cranking a bunch of flow through the Columbia, and it just moves those anchor points or breaks those anchor points. And they've had those net pens fold up and spill fish as well in there.
But they actually,
luckily, not Atlantic salmon in this case, though.
Yeah. You know, I guess they're really having to change their modus operandi
up in
Canada.
I sure hope they do. And I hope we do here in the U.S. too. I mean, that's just not something to be messed with.
Well, would you mind explaining a little bit to maybe folks who are not aware of this? Like, what happens when they bring Atlantic salmon over to the Pacific, thinking they're going to keep them, you know, penned up? And obviously something's going to happen somewhere along the line. What is the danger?
Well, you know, one of the big dangers is kind of one of the ones that we have just here in the work that I do all the time in fisheries. Even in between all these steelhead and Pacific salmon, they kind of can all have an inherent disease. Like spring chinook, I learned a lot about dealing with BKD, bacterial kidney disease. With sockeye, you usually have IHN, internal hemorrhagic necrosis. And also steelhead can kind of have that as like their quote-unquote ailment that they have more often. They, you know, it's inherent for them, so they can kind of deal with it. But like we talked about in the last thing about net pens, these diseases are always present. And just like in people, if you crowd everybody together, that's when you have real bad outbreaks. And then you add some stress and perhaps some bacteria, you know, from all these fish together. But if you, the other danger is not only concentration, but, you know, like I say, the springers usually have some level of BKD, bacterial kidney disease, and the sockeye, say, have the IHN. They can each tolerate it kind of left alone as long as it's in their groups. But if you infect, like, say, the springers with the IHN from the sockeye, that's when you have a huge crash. That's when you have a huge problem. Yeah. They're not inherently... they haven't developed the ability to deal with this sickness the same way. And so I imagine, you know, that's a concern with these salmon from the Atlantic. You know, they probably have, I'm not as familiar with Atlantic salmon, obviously, being a fish culture guy from the Pacific, but I'm sure those they've got their own niche disease that these fish don't need.
Well, these are, these are the issues. And you know what, as you talked, I asked partly because I wanted to know, but it it reminds me of, you know, back in the day when there weren't a lot of people going from one continent to another continent.
Yeah,
you know, Europe had a lot of smallpox, and it was a devastating disease. Yep. But there was a lot of people with scars on their face who had lived through it.
Yep.
I mean, in fact, a lot of famous people who, if you look into their, you know, actual history, had endured smallpox, and they were marked up by it. Well, you can travel to a new country, introduce something that they've never dealt with. It's almost complete decimation.
Yeah, you haven't gotten to that point in the genetic pool where you you find those individuals
resistant
to it. And that's kind of the case here,
sure. Yeah, it kind of makes
sense. Yeah, you worry about that. And then there's always the worry of them getting out there and spawning, starting a wild population. They have seen cases of fish trying to spawn before this that I heard of on Vancouver Island. They've never seen any successful returns from those fish. Pretty unlikely unless you just have a constant dumping in of enough fish to make it happen. And that doesn't really seem to be the problem. But, you know, like I say, it absolutely. Could. There's a possibility, hey, there's a possibility.
Yeah.
And especially, like I say, if you're doing it more and more, then you're introducing more and more opportunity.
And off Vancouver, those are Atlantic salmon net pen operations?
Yeah. And they had... You know, they had had their own problems with them, and so they were doing studies. They were tracking them. They were these fish. You know, a lot of people say they won't even try to spawn, but they were. They were going through the motions. They're putting eggs in the gravel and everything. But luckily, they didn't see any returns from it. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. Yeah. You know, whether they get in there and compete for the feeding or breeding space, or bring some kind of new germs in, or just concentrations of old germs.
It's the same old in a way with human beings. We just, it's hubris. Yeah. We think
we
know stuff.
We love to stick our finger in the pie, don't we?
Yeah, we do. We think we're so smart. Yeah. Okay, so you've been up to Rufus.
Yep.
Anyplace else?
Yep. I went up to Blue Lake yesterday in the Sinlihiekan, the beautiful Sinlihiekan Valley. I don't know if you've been back up there in a
In a long time, no.
But gosh, so beautiful. I was up there a lot working with WDFW when I did, doing their kokanee thing up at Palmer Lake. Mm-hmm. So I'd get to spend a lot of time up there every fall. But it's been a while. And yeah, the Fly Club was having outing up there, so I met up with a few of my buddies up there. Yeah, and you know, I always want to throw out a word for the Fly Club, just because it's a great organization here in town. Not only do we do stuff like that together, we have meetings generally once a month. We'll bring in cool speakers, you know, just whether it's different fisher folks with different techniques, or guys like that have traveled out to, say, exotic locations like Christmas Island. They'll bring back videos for us to watch of these places that I'll never be able to afford to go to. Just cool stuff. And they do a lot of work on boat ramps and stuff around here. And one of the coolest things I really think is that we get to do a scholarship for Liberty Bell students that are going to be going into either biology or wildlife enforcement, because Lord knows we always need some more game wardens around here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a really cool program, great club. I'm happy to be involved with. And lately we started doing our meetings at the Three Bears. They got that cool place upstairs. And so we get a nice nacho bar and can have beer or wine while you're
I know, that's a nice place
there.
To hang
so
out, man.
It's just really cool. We used to do it in the library mostly, but, you know, it's really nice to be able to kind of have a little more comfortable atmosphere to relax in.
I had a guy come in here earlier today, and he said he was getting ready to do these podcasts, these sort of man cave podcasts.
Oh, yeah?
And he had a buddy, and one of the things that kind of talked him into it, he had a buddy who was going to a fly fisherman's meeting down in San Francisco, which is apparently like one of the earliest ones. It's been going on for a long time, and they have like the world champion casting competition. Well, it turns out that this guy, this friend of his friend, is in that competition. He's actually one of the 10 top
10 fishers.
Yeah, he's trying. Nice. And so he was practicing somewhere trying to stay in the top 10. You know, and I just didn't even know that kind of stuff had happened.
Oh yeah, you know, there's competitions for catching and casting and and everything. I can't imagine myself ever leaning that way. I've never been one for a competition. I really am,
even in your martial art days, you weren't competing.
I always felt like I just wanted to be the best that I could be, and it didn't really have anything to do with anybody else. I mean, I took joy in being skilled at it like I do with fishing, but I don't want to be better than I don't know. I don't really like competition. It's a weird thing.
I get you.
It's not that I don't feel that I can compete. I just don't like sometimes the attitudes that competition can bring about.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just a weird Buddhist in that way.
I'm sure that's true. That's why I always did or preferred to do individual sports.
Yeah.
Team sports was because of all the multiplicity of attitude.
Yeah, I mean, I love the genuine camaraderie, but I don't like when there's a dynamic that's either fake camaraderie or unhealthy attitude in competition.
Well, being the dad of sons, that's when you really realize that. Yeah. You know, you don't want this coming into the family.
Absolutely.
You know?
But I'm afraid I see my boy Finley is the same way. He's just kind of like, he just as soon kick the ball over to the other kid and give him a turn. Whatever. That's
Keep it in context, Leif.
Yeah, totally.
You'll do it. I know you'll do it.
You know, one thing I've been wanting to talk to folks about out there, you know, we've been talking a lot about government funding and these fisheries and everything. You know, there's a lot of change been going on. The state is obviously in financial problems. You can see it where they're trying to ask for you to pay per mile and how you drive and everything. Last year, in a closed door session, they managed to pass a bill that was written basically by a lobbying group in disguise as a environmental defense group and a larger fishing guide operation, is all I'll really say. But they were able to form the wording of a bill that was passed in closed door session that doubled all the guides license fees in the state. It also dropped by more than a third the out-of-state guides fees. You know, I can accept
dropped by a third the out-of-state.
Yeah, and so
they're looking for like the multinationalist type of guide business. In other words, guys that spans over many states,
or the biggest guides in this state.
So you would be a complete
version. The way this is going, it's going to push a lot of these local and smaller businesses out of business. It's kind of the tip of the spear, and a lot of people. You know, I tried to point this out in the last report. In one of the reports before, I'm somewhat disappointed in some of the folks in the WDFW, mainly higher up there. I really support everything that we've always been doing here, all of us fisheries folks. But I want people to bear in mind, this is just like a pathology that I see in fish. We've got these three spheres that come together, and it's that meeting point where multiple spheres come together that you get a genuine problem, you know, a disease outbreak or a sickness. And we're really getting like this in the way that our bureaucracy is running, because we've got one sphere that's the WDFW. They've got their own problems. They're trying to do the best job they can, though. And the way that it works is we buy our licenses, everything else, and then they have to give that to the state. And then that goes into the general fund. And then they get back what part, the state decides to give
part of it.
Yeah. So that's where they're kind of hamstrung. And I want people to realize that. But as well, we've got big lobbying groups and bigger guide groups coming together, put that sphere on top of there. They've got their own interests, and they're definitely not mine. And we've also got the state's government, and their interest is trying to fund this state. They also have other interests as well, though. We've got people that are friends between these large guide organizations and these lobbying groups that are also politicians. So it's pretty easy for them to get these bills written the way they want to. So right now, we're going through a period where we'll have some feedback, and the guides get to go and say what they think of all this. Probably won't really matter. That's just been my experience in the past. But this brings to light, you know, a bigger issue that I think is kind of an elephant in the room for me as a guide. And it's, I've talked about it before. Most people don't like fishing guides unless they're the ones paying the fishing guide. I need people to understand, though, outside of even my sympathetic audience, that, you know, we get put up there as a straw man. Whether a person is not having a good day, that can be perceived as our fault.
Yeah.
Or whether fisheries, you know, are having a bad year or season.
Still,
lot of people like to perceive that as our fault, too.
Sure.
They got to realize that most of these fish are getting taken by dams and commercial fishing and bad ocean conditions. And so people can't be squabbling amongst themselves and pointing, like they naturally do, at a straw man. And sometimes I think some of these organizations that take our money are guilty of standing there with their mouth silent instead of, you know, saying, hey, these guys, I mean, I drive people to the store to buy their license all the time to give these folks the money that we need backup from, saying, hey, these guys are, they bring in a lot of money, whether it's hotel rooms, gas, grocery stores, gear shops, all this stuff. And we are a drop in the bucket when it comes to fish take. And there's folks like I that will bend over backwards to try to make the day better of anybody out there, even if they're not paying me.
Well, so, you know, let me just put in a couple of words as well for you're a catch and release guy, and
I know,
we actually want this river to stay kind of like it was in the 1700s. I mean, that is good with us. And so having it, you know, be more open to, you know, being overrun by a Montana outfitting
folks that
corporation,
have no skin in the game.
Yeah. I think I understand how a lot of times people look at what's good for business is growing and bigger, et cetera. But some things, you will lose the coolness of the whole place if you let it be messed up.
You know, and this is just, I mean, I don't want to sound big-headed, but I challenge you to find someone that knows these fisheries better than I do, you know. And between that and what I think is a good rapport that I have with most every client I ever have, I just don't think you're going to get a much better guide. And you're definitely not going to get it from some mega guide corp that has their guide drive in the day before you have your trip with them and then claims to know everything about the local river. I think it's just not going to lead to anybody feeling better. You're going to have people that are even less sympathetic and sensitive to what you feel about them out there, whether it be the public or what have you. And, you know, it's ironic to me that some of the folks that help craft this are, you know, and I don't want to get super political, but it's ironic to me that some of the people who helped craft this are Republicans, because this is completely against free market. In the free market, there can be a ton of guides, and that should make you an even better guide if you're the one that's chosen over all those people. And in my opinion, if you're not a good guide, you're not going to be successful. You're not going to be around long anyway.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but I mean, you know, opening it up to these bigger entities, for how many years would it take to drive you out of business if they're the ones buying all the magazine ads and everything that makes it difficult for you to compete? After a number of years, you would be pushed out of business.
Right.
In reality.
Right.
Because they're the ones, because not everybody who comes here knows about you.
Exactly.
Yet.
Yeah. A lot of people book their trip before they ever get here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a thing I just wanted to throw out there. I don't have the gentleman's number with me, but if you get on the WDFW webpage and care enough to give some input, look up Kelly Cunningham's number. Kelly Cunningham is the one who's taking all the input for this stuff. He's the one coming around to our meetings to talk to us. you know, I've I feel like he can see things the way I'm seeing things, but they mm-hmm. really need to hear input from all the other folks here. And I you know, the people at Hate Guides are super happy to give that kind of input. But the people that love guides don't generally tell anybody but the guide. So, you know, we could probably use some backup, some help at this point.
I didn't even know that you had people who were hating on you. I just...
You would if you were me.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's, you know, you just don't get on many of these forums online and stuff unless you want to get completely lambasted. But like I say, you know, it's just those guys that think that they're having a bad day and it's your fault. They can't take any accountability for the fact that they're not... maybe not doing the right job out there.
Well,
But, you know, I just want to lay it out there for folks. We could definitely use a little support at this point mm-hmm. because things might just be changing. And, you know, it's going to, the money is just going to keep on being an issue. Your licenses are going to get more expensive too. Awfully ironic that my license got expensive, more expensive because, yes, I'm a catch and release guide. So I'm not sure how much more it cost them to do nothing than last year to these fish, but.
It's more expensive to be catch and release?
Well, I mean, it doubled and it's not anything that they've done anything more to do.
But a catch and keep guide would pay less?
No, they have to pay more too.
Okay.
Well, the only people that have to pay less are the out-of-state guides. So
that's odd. That's really odd.
Maybe it's because our new director's from Idaho. I'm not sure. Just throwing that one out there.
I understand people want to come here and fish our rivers, but fish your own rivers.
You know, and that reminds me, I'm not against regulation. I'm the kind of guy who thinks, you know, I'm from region 2. That's the area that I live in here. I feel like I should be able to guide region 2, and if I want to go to region 3, I should either put in for a lottery or maybe pay a little bit more for that. You know, I could see something like that. But these giant axe swoops instead of scalpels are just mm-hmm. so typically governmental and really getting on my nerves. We need to kind of craft this all a little bit more nuanced.
I'll tell you, I'm sorry to hear this, but maybe, you know, talking about it is one of the things you and I can do anyway.
Yeah, you know, I mean, because I think you're right. I think a lot of people aren't even aware of it. It will be coming up on your ballot. There is a chance to resend the latest measure there, and it should be right on the top of your ballot. It says, you know, we're trying to get X amount from Washington State Fishing Guides. It sounds like a no-brainer for some people, like, oh, that's easy money, but...
This election here?
It's in the recent round of ballots that everybody should have just gotten.
Okay.
And, you know, like I said, we all have giant overhead. We're not getting rich doing this. Okay. For me, it's just a thing I really like to do, you know, and it just kind of helps my family at the same time.
Okay, so I'm going to look this up. I had not noticed that. So is it yes or no?
You're going to want to vote no. I mean, vote yes on this repeal.
Rescind.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Because, like I say, you didn't even get an up or down vote on it as it came through the first time.
Okay.
And, hey, we'd really appreciate it. As for everything else, you know, these lowland lakes have been fishing great. I got a message from one of our listeners, said he just had, I think it was a majestic few days over here fishing Little Twin and some of these others. Oh, cool. I mean, that's what it is right here, right now.
It has majestic. Been wonderful.
It's beautiful.
Out, I know.
And there's been some great fishing reports. There's new plants into Davis and a few of these others. So tons of fish, really good fishing. If anybody needs any tips on where to go or how to do it or would like to book a trip, just give me a call, 509-429-7298, or look me up on the old interwebs at methowfishingadventures@gmail.com. And you can check out the blog or podcast at Fly Fishers Pro Shop. Take care of one another, protect that private land, demand the most from your public representatives, and get that fish right on. My mama's gone fishing and the baby gone fishing too.